And that was kind of the general rumor that she'd been going out with black guys.
But she'd been, she had been going out with him, and that this one particular one, I don't know which one it was, but that, but I had heard that a number of times, quite some time after this had happened.
You had no official reason to believe, though, through your position, that she was working with these gang of guys. There were some rumors that she would get out with a married guy, for example, and then they'd rob him.
Yeah, I heard that too, but I that was all hearsay, and I don't know of anybody that had any real substantive information.
Did you have much discussion with Mr. Hardin during these days along in there about this case at all, or did he pretty much go on his own, or kind of keep it quiet, or?
Oh, I think that he was under a lot of stress and strain at that time, and there was times that he would just come to talk to me to unload, but he was never very friendly about Jake Campbell from that time on, because and especially after the election, he felt that what Jake had done with it was what beat him. Mm-hmm. I personally don't really think so. I think anybody who had been running on a Republican ticket would probably have gotten beaten then.
It'd been pretty hard for anybody getting that jail if you really didn't want him in there, I think. I can understand the position you're caught in when that happens. You got citizens in the community that may just go crazy. But there are a lot of things.
In defense of Jake Campbell, I think that he ensure that he didn't want to hurt anybody. And I think if he was going to stop it, he'd have had killed somebody before he could have stopped it. I don't know. This Harley and I talked about it some. And I think it was Harley's feeling that if you're going to stop that mob, that somebody would have been either killed or hurt by gunfire. Because they were in a sense a really unruly mob.
Do you ever have any sense of, I suppose everybody does something and tries to handle things a certain way, at least that's been my experience. Now, there may be some reason, particularly the prosecutor's job. Most people don't realize the prosecutor has as much obligation to protect innocent people as it does prosecute. That's a pretty heavy burden. But do you ever have any sense that, for example, there were a number of articles later on ran in the Indianapolis newspapers saying that the confidence of the people in this area and the courts and the prosecution system had been shaken, and that was one of the reasons it intensified the mob effort, because they had been not prosecuting people or turning people loose. And then they ran a bunch of statistics and showed.
Well, we lost a hell of a lot of cases, whether it was our fault or whether it's the fault of the jury system.
But there wasn't any standard. You didn't think there's any standard that Harley would just, if it happened to be some black people that he thought were political friends or something, that he just nollied the case or did something with. You didn't get a feeling that went on, did you?
I don't think he would have dismissed the case for his sister if he thought that she was guilty. That's kind of a man that I thought he was.
And I guess in that time, too, really, the police weren't the most adept people in the world at collecting evidence, were they?
Actually, as a group, they weren't the smartest ones of individuals. And they had absolutely no training. if they caught somebody, they were pretty lucky.
Almost had to be a red-handed catch.
Yeah. And it's like now, they're a little better now than they were then, but they don't follow the rules of the game on making an arrest or a search, or they're somewhat improved, but they're still not really good police officers now. They're fine people, I understand. I'm not criticizing them at all. I think it's a system. And they've come a long way since 1930. I mean, they're... but to begin with, you don't get a college graduate to take a policeman's job in a town this size. And you don't get very many men that are dedicated. They want to work 20 years or 25 years. They're thinking about getting that pension. And ever since I've been a lawyer, if they're a bit ambitious at all, whether they're working another job, it's paying them as much or more than the policeman's job. I think these I hate to use the word uneducated, but I think as a whole they're an uneducated group of people that have been. Now, there's nothing wrong with the kind of work that they've had, but they've been truck drivers, ditch diggers, and with that kind of a background. This has improved some. I think they've all, most of them at least, although some of them, like Charlie Truex and Teagarden, if you talk to them, you'd never thought they got through the eighth grade. They were, some of them were brutal. I saw Charlie Truex one time hit a little black boy in the face and knocked him clear across the room. Here's Charlie, a great big guy, because he says, "You're lying to me, you little black bastard," you know.
Were there any other people you remember during that time of the police force, the names we went through here, who would be classified as, or you observed anything like that? That was pretty standard procedure for police, but I mean, anyone that might have been a little more rougher than somebody else?
No. But I think anyone, now Frank Brandon wouldn't stand for it. Frank Brandon was a, as I say, he was a policeman, I don't know what his background was before he became a policeman, but he was a gentleman, and he believed that the officer ought to go out and do his job and not depend on muscle, but get his information. And I know we had others, I don't recall their names, that were, but they were in the minority.
Let me slip back just a minute here, something we were talking about. We got up to, and I know there'd probably be no vivid recollection, but there are some from the time is, do you know who was anybody you remember made these phone calls to Hardin that said there's something brewing out here? You said there were several phone calls.
No. The only thing that I think I remember is that most of them come from the Fairmount area. And why, I don't know.
And did he call Jake? He called Jake. Then that afternoon, do you recollect
that? I think that he even went to talk to him after he got the response. I'm sure that he went and talked to him after he got the response on the telephone.
So you remember anything you did that afternoon? Just went about your normal business. But you didn't recollect talking to anyone or hearing any crowds gather or anything like
there
that?
There wasn't. There wasn't.
What time would you normally go home? There was a schedule that you had to catch a certain car?
No. We were pretty busy, and I, as I recall, we were putting in about 12 hours a day up there at the office. But
on that particular day, did you go to Gas City and then get your wife and then come back?
Yeah.
Came back on the traction car?
I was trying to remember how we did come back, whether somebody drove us over or not. I can't, because we were too damn poor to have an automobile at that time.
But you were kind of at a little party or a gathering.
We just...
And whose house was that?
I don't even remember the name of the people. They were... she had a good friend, girlfriend, whose name was Thomas, lived in Gas City, and I think they'd moved away, and they were back visiting these people. And the only thing I remember, they lived in the vicinity of 18th and Adams Street.
And you remember what time of night it was when you heard the sirens or whatever it was?
I thought, the way I remember, it was around 9 or 9:30.
And you had a conversation with someone. You remember saying, who was the person that said something to you?
I don't know, the people that lived there said we ought to go down and see what's going on. And I said, I think I know what's going on, and I'm a car, and I'm going home.
So you caught the car and went back home. And no one called you, or you didn't talk to anybody that night at all about the events until the next morning. And then you had the unfortunate conversation with the newspaper reporters. Did you have any other meetings that day with Hardin or talk to him or hear him talk about
it? He was busy with all that day, and I went about did whatever work I had to do over in city court or anything else, and I didn't have anything.
What about the National Guard? Did you ever see any of the National Guard people or talk to them or have conversations with them in any way?
Don't even remember if the National Guard was involved, really.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered the ground. I appreciate you taking all this time.
I rambled around here about a lot of nothing.
No, that's very significant. You see that sometimes you have trouble setting a tone, and a lot of things will come into play, just the uses of language a lot of times. And I prefer to do it that way rather than tell someone what I think happened. Let them kind of recall their memory, and then if they get sort of crossed up on times or dates, which is easy to do, I'll try to straighten it out. But like little stories that you tell about things, see, those are human interest things that help build a character of a person. And that's been extremely valuable. You've really given me some helpful information. I really appreciate you taking time to do that and me coming in unannounced and all, but had a little time, so I didn't come up until last evening.
Well, I'm retired. Semi-retired. My wife said our house is not big enough for both of us, so I have to come down to the office.
That's yeah.
But I've been very fortunate in my public life to have had real good friends with the press. I attribute much of it to this Brandon, the reporter here in Marion. Especially down in Indianapolis, because he made me acquainted with all of the reporters that had anything to do with the legislature. And thank God, because I could have been crucified a lot of times I'm quick to say what I think, you know, and when I was president pro tem of the Senate and Trigger was governor, they were going to have an investigation of vote fraud in Lake County. We'd ask I don't know whether I was chairman of the committee or what, but we'd ask the clerk to bring the voting records to Indianapolis. And he wouldn't know who was going to pay for all the truckloads and stuff that he was going to have to bring down there. And I thought that we had done everything possible that you could do to keep, to not let anything get out that we thought that Governor Schricker had anything to do with it. It was a matter of something in Lake County, and it was not to hurt Henry's character or any kind. And we were busy with the other things that needed to be done in the legislature, and we finally decided to hell with it. We just get rid of it as easily as possible and still with whatever we did to do it to assure everybody that Henry Schricker was of high character and everything else. I got a telephone call the next morning. I went back to answer, and here's some guy in the Chicago Tribune. And he'd given me an alleged quote from Henry, what he said about me and the committee. And I never did ask Henry whether he'd said that or not, but the first thing that comes to my mind was this. I said, did the son of a bitch say that? And it was no longer out of my mouth, and I thought, now this is going to look good on the front page of the Chicago Tribune. And then I went on and explained to them that I said, well, I'm sorry that the governor feels that way about me personally, because I like Henry Schricker. I served one term under him as lieutenant governor, and he and I were always very good friends, I don't think that he had any reason for making this kind of comment about me or any members of the committee, because I think the committee was, if you can remember when he was a legislature, and especially since the committee was majority Republican, that he ought to have thought that we were doing him a whale of a favor the way that we were trying to take care of him, you know. Thank goodness there was a thing like that in the paper the next morning, you know. But I'm a poor politician.
Now, what's your full name?
Burke Jones.
Where you live, Burke?
I live at 610 West 10th Street, Marion, Indiana.
And have you lived in Marion all your life?
I lived in Marion all my life with exception when I railroad. I was gone for about 5 years. I came back, I left in 1919. I came back in June of 1924 when my mother died.
Well, I don't worry about it, I told you not. What I'm trying to do is do a little research on the circumstances surrounding the lynching that took place in 1930. And just to refresh your memory a little bit, on August the 6th, 1930, which is a Wednesday, in the evening, like 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, there was a fellow by the name of Dieter who was shot out on the old Dieter River Road. Yeah. There was a girl with him by the name of Mary Ball. And the shooting allegedly was performed by a black fellow by the name of Tom Shipp in the company of a fellow by the name of Abram Smith, and a third fellow by the name of Herbert Cameron. And they apprehended these fellows later on that night. They were put in the Grant County Jail. And then sometime on early 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the evening, the mob broke in and lynched these fellows that night, Thursday night. And what I'm trying to find out is if you recollect that period of time at all or any of the circumstances about it.
Let me say this. I was chauffeuring at that time for Harwood, and I was in Madison, Wisconsin. I came back the same night that they were lynched. On Thursday night when they were lynched, I got back in.
Who were you chauffeuring for?
Harwoods.
Harwoods?
Yes.
H-A-R?
W-O-D.
And what was his name?
Carlton.
Carlton.
Carlton. They called him Corky.
Corky. And what did he do?
He had motorcycle business and automobile business and a Silver Fox Farm out here where the 4-H Fairgrounds is now.
And you were working for him then as a chauffeur?
Yes.
And when had you gone up to Wisconsin, did you say?
Yeah, I went to Madison, Wisconsin.
When had you gone up there?
I went up to Madison, about a week before I came back. I stayed up there.
Did he come back with you?
Yes.
His wife, too?
His wife, him and his wife both came back, and they're both dead now.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else with you?
No, that's all.
What kind of car was it?
Cadillac.
Yeah. What year? 1930?
It's been a long time. I couldn't tell you what year it was.
What color was it?
Black.
Black?
Yeah.
Side curtains on it?
Yeah, she had side curtains you could pull down in the back, you know, of the car like that.
Side walls?
Huh?
Have those old white side
walls? Yeah, white.
A tire on the fender?
Yeah, had two tires on the fender, one on each side.
Trunk?
Yep, they all had a trunk.
With one of those box trunks? Or
the trunk was put on there extra. It wasn't built into the car.
And you had one of those things on a sparker on a steering wheel and an accelerator? Was that on the steering wheel?
No, I don't think it was. I think mine is down like that. I know there were on there, but on this Cadillac, I think it was on a foot pedal. Yeah.
How fast would she go?
Well, I don't know. I drove at 90.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
90? Is that right?
Yeah. I drove 90 miles an hour.
How much mileage was it getting, gas?
I don't know that. Don't remember that. But I think it got as good a mileage or better than we get now.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So. Well, when did you arrive back in Marion?
I came back, I don't know, I suppose it was 8 or 8:30 that night, and I got home, my wife was crying and all like that, and she was telling me what happened. What was her name?
What's your wife?
Othelia.
Is she still living?
No, she's dead. She'd been dead 11 years the 30th of August.
Where did you live at that time?
I lived 610 West 10, same place.
Same
I lived
place?
Time. Yeah.
Okay, excuse me for interrupting. Go ahead.
That's all
she
right.
She was crying?
Yeah, she was crying and telling me, because somebody had called her and told her they'd lynched these boys and told us to be careful because they were going to kill other colored people and like this, And I parked the car at the Marion garage where they always stored it and walked from their home. That's from 3rd Nebraska to 610 West 10.
So how far would that be about?
Well, it would be, four... be six, it'd be about 12 blocks.
So on your way home, you never came through the downtown?
No, I never came through the downtown. I didn't know what had happened, But now this fellow I'm telling you about, Alonzo Marshall, now he would be able to give you some thing. He's well up in years. I don't think he's quite as old as I am. I think he's in his late 70s.
Okay.
But he was here. You know him?
I don't think I do. I might.
He runs a tavern down here. Runs Marshall's Tavern.
I see.
And
where is that?
It's just you go east on 4th Street, and just as you cross the railroad, his business is on there. He owns all that business there. Of course, the first building is empty, and then he has a tavern and a second and a pool room and a barber shop.
Well, what did you do then that night? Anything particular?
I didn't do a thing, only just got a shotgun and went up there and laid upstairs so I could look out the window. That was all.
Did you stay up all night?
Yeah, I was laid up there all night, that's right.
Would you have children then?
I had three daughters.
They at home?
I had three daughters.
How old were they at that time?
Well, I don't know just exactly. My oldest daughter died 6 years ago and she was 56. And they run about a year apart.
younger?
Yeah, a little over.
Okay, what were their names, or the girls' names?
The oldest one was Jeanette, Elizabeth, and Margaret. And Elizabeth and Margaret are still living. Elizabeth, she's an assistant school teacher here, teacher's aide. And Margaret, she's a school teacher in Baltimore, Maryland.
When were you born?
I was born December the 14th,
1893.
Yeah. I'll be 84 years old this December.
Where were you born?
I was born out here in eight and a half miles southwest of Marion.
Round Weaver?
Yeah.
Is that right? And how did your folks come here from somewhere?
Well, my my folks were originally, what I mean originally, came from North Carolina to Dart County, Ohio. And then from Dart County, Ohio to Grant County. And I was born and reared in a log cabin out there, which burned down in November of 1905.
Now that was kind of one of the stops on the Underground Railroad at
yeah.
the time, is that not
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Okay. Do you have brothers and sisters? Did you have
one? I have two sisters living. One sister lives in Muncie, Pauline Stafford, and Otto Newsom lives here. And all of us are over 80 years old.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's go back just a minute then. So you stayed up all night. Did anybody come to talk to you at the house or call you? No, did you have a telephone then?
Yes, I had a telephone.
One of those old crank
now,
kinds?
No, I didn't have to crank ours, but we were on a party line at that time. And it was only the fellow that called was a fellow by the name of, we called him Buck Bassett, I think. I don't know what his real first name was. And he called and wanted me to get a gun and things like that to protect yourself. And that was the only thing. I don't know whether...
Was there any meetings that went on, you know, of that night?
Well, there was meetings, but I never attended any of the meetings. They were out south.
You know whereabouts, or
no? I don't. I couldn't tell you where they were.
Okay, now let's go on to the next morning. Did you do anything particular the next morning, or
no,
see anybody, or talk to?
I got up, went to work, just
where
like.
Where were you working?
I worked for Harwood.
Oh yes.
I got
me.
Up.
That's right.
I got up, went to work, just the same as I always did. Never bothered, and I was never bothered myself personally. Was never bothered any time. But of course now I've endured a lot of hardships during my time because I chauffeured and I went south and I've had tough times.
Did you talk to the Harwoods about this at all, or was anything said?
Yes, I talked to a Harwood. I talked to them and they instructed me what I mean to be careful and like this, and if anybody said anything to me, why to avoid it as much as I possibly could. That
well,
was the whole thing.
A lot of black people during that time, about that time, went back to Weaver, went out of town, didn't they?
Yeah, so quite a few people went out of town.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah. Let me ask you whether or not, did you know any chance any of the ships, Tom's ship?
I knew the ships, now I knew the Smiths better.
Okay, and Abe Smith?
Yeah, I knew Abe Smith. I knew them. See, the Smiths, all they come up out near Weaver, see.
Let's see.
Is it running out?